Mr. Day, Reel 3. We were talking about your growing, and so you mentioned the DDMS came, which means...
At Ragby, the regiment was visited by the DDMS, Deputy Director Medical Services, Major General Nesman, who congratulated Finnegan in front of Colonel Seely on his work that he had done with a sick man who had this first epidemic, because hospitals, there were lots of hospitals up there, and also filling in this man who I had sutured. He showed the deputy director the suturing that I had done, and I'm pleased about it. I was quite sort of frightened at the time, but as soon as I got the suture needle in my hand, it came naturally, and there was no problem at all. Had I not have done it, had I got any qualms, I would not have done it, but I felt quite capable of it, and I did it.
Now, had you been doing any reading?
Yes.
I mean, what were you...
I read Hamilton Bailey's Advanced Surgery. Hamilton Bailey wrote a lot of Advanced Surgery, a lot about the Spanish Civil War, and the wounds that have been incurred during the Spanish Civil War, and... strange enough, the benefit of maggots. Maggots which appeared, and they did well, maggots, because they used to absorb the pus, eat pus, and exude forward calcium carbonate, which was beneficial to wounds, and cleaned the wounds. Which was, it's a very strange thing, but it was true, it was mentioned in this book about the Spanish Civil War. I suppose medicine today, of course, is far, far more advanced than it was then.
And what sort of things, I mean, it says advanced surgery, I presume that wasn't the side you were concentrating. What sort of things was it talking about? I mean, it about giving stitches and...
Yes, suturing, catgut, of course, that is internal, and silkworm is external.
What's the difference?
Well, one dissolves. Anything sutured inside the body has got to dissolve, because you can't open the wound up again to take the sutures out of it, the ligature out from an appendix. The appendix is... cut off, and the ligature is fried, and you can't take that out when you shoot them up.
And
that
what
helped the appendix.
And what other sorts of advice were you reading, or what techniques were you trying to grasp?
The techniques of, well, the treatment a lot of the meningitis that was prevalent at the time, and the things of diagnosing meningitis.
And what were they?
Trash in the brow, Bruninski, and Koenig. I don't have to use words, but they're all signs and symptoms of meningitis. A person laying flat on his back, if you lift his head up, his head comes up, his body stays still. The meningitis, the whole lot will come up, or try to, because the cerebral spinal canal is infected by
That's all right. Yes, they can look. People can look up the rest of it and see what it was.
Yeah.
What other things were you trying to learn?
From the book that I was.
From the book, yeah.
All sorts of diseases, especially tropical, subtropical diseases, and also a lot about VD, which is very incapacitated at that time, and at this time, I suppose, to a modern army in the field. There's more damage done by that than a lot by wounds and bullets, you know, especially in the Middle East.
Did you have any VD cases in the UK?
In the UK, yes, one. I remember one.
And what was the prevalent disease, would you say, in the UK?
There were.
And how would that be treated then?
Hospital. We did have PAC, prophylactic ablution centres, where there was an antiseptic that a man used after having intercourse. Of course, the contraceptives were hand should be required, and I issue. But that didn't come until winter.
Right, we'll come back to that perhaps later. So you were trying the self-improvement thing, but I mean, you know, reading and think, was there no training? I mean, in the Royal Army Medical Corps, people go through quite a lot of training about splints and wounds and diagnosis. But you never got this formal training.
I never got any formal training. I was always in the INC, and I was always with the doctor. And what training I got derived from practical experience working alongside all the various doctors I worked with during the war, of all nationalities. Well, not all nationalities, but a lot of nationalities.
Now, in January, you went away. To Palestine. What preparations were made for that trip by you, the medical section, so to speak? What supplies did you have to take with you? What equipment? Or would you pick your equipment up when you went overseas?
You would take the normal equipment to be able to treat sick or wounded men at that time, during that space of time, in the interim period between departing from England and arriving in Palestine. The rest, we were always supplied by the medical bases in the first instance in Salafan, and then Hadera.
So you'd be supplied by the RAMC depots?
Right.
What would you take with you then? I mean, would you need much to go?
Well, we took splinting, all sorts, wire splinting, and shell dressings, field dressings, and of course, usual things.
Had by then, I mean, you said you learned by experience. You presumably hadn't had much chance to learn about these things yet, the shell dressings and splints and things.
We had no wounded men at that time because we hadn't had any casualties.
So you wouldn't have had any training in them? You wouldn't have had a chance to observe the doctor? Or had he taken you through these things?
Oh, yes. We had been through the effects of high explosives, broken limbs, in case of any traction and broken limbs. And
so he'd given you some practical training in that?
That's right.
Had you actually practiced putting bandages on and splints on?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yes,
continuously. Yes. We'll come to how you did it in action, you know, when we get to that. So, what about the trip? Did you get any embarkation leave before you went out?
Yes, I got a week around about Christmas 1939.
What do you remember of that?
I remember going back and delivering bread. I remember going shooting at Barraby in the in Lincolnshire, near Grantham. And not much else, really. Christmas parties.
Okay. How did your family react to the fact you were going, or your father react to the fact you were going overseas?
Well, he was an emotional man. He sort of thought, what am I going to do? How am I going to run the business without you, you know? But,
How was he coping? I mean, when you'd left to do the war?
Well, my mother died. He got married again. And she did quite well.
So he'd do the delivery round.
He did the delivery. He did lots. We had three bakers working for us, doing baked bread and confection, and he delivered it.
So what about the journey out? What do you remember about that journey in January, 1940? What happened there?
The regimental rum ration. So I remember ISM 40 had something to do with it, but I know it finished up in my carriage. And I remember George Yeomans going down sick with a temperature, and I remember Finnegan telling me that I must look after him and stay with him at all times, and going into an officer's club in Cherbourg, and I was told that I must go in with him, or I wasn't supposed to, but I had to go in with him to see that he made him minister. And I was sent out in a terrific hurry by a red-capped officer. I don't know whether he was a brigadier or a general or one of his staff officers or what else, but he told me I shouldn't be in the... I told him I explained I was medically ill, looking after this sick officer. And I'm afraid when Finnegan returned, the doctor returned, there was quite a few words between him and the staff officer. And I was told to come back and not to disobey orders in the future. I remember that in Cherbourg.
What about the train journey?
I remember the train journey. Every time the train stopped, we were surrounded by girls. Did my best to get out the carriage as quick as possible and embrace. I was not the only one. Everybody was all for that. Yeah.
Now, in the history, it makes a lot.
Oh, sorry.
It makes a lot of the journey being quite difficult, and people were ill and had temperatures and sore throats, and that it was very cold.
It was cold.
Do you remember there being a lot of sickness on the journey?
No.
So you didn't have to deal with anyone?
Only one man I looked after, and that was George Owens, who was a lieutenant, George Owens, the 46th Battalion.
And anything else about the journey?
We arrived in Marseille, we embarked from Marseille on the Devonshire. And there I got a job again as a medic orderly on the Devonshire, with two or three more.
As a ship's medical orderly?
Yes, there was quite a company of sort of the usual staff employed on the ship as medical personnel, permanent staff, that's permanent medical staff.
And what did you have to do as medical orderly on the ship?
Well, just tend to the sick, of course. The other, well, I think there was another, at least maybe two more units went over on the same boat. I think the Yorkshire Goons, I can't remember exactly.
Now, one chap, according to this, was Gunner Shipley.
He got meningitis. And the ship, the boat, I think it was stood to in Hyford Bay with a yellow flag on, being infectious, having carrying infectious disease. He wasn't allowed to land until he had clearing papers from the authorities in Haifa. He was treated, Finnegan diagnosed it quickly, and he was treated and he recovered. And we arrived in Haifa.
Did you have to take any precautions in dealing with someone with a...
Yes, there were gargling parades and various things like that.
But what about anything special for you? You'd be in contact with Shipley, would you? Were there any special precautions?
I had several throat swabs to see if I was carrying anything. People did do that, so we carried anything.
So what were your first impressions on your arrival at Haifa? When you did get ashore?
I liked Haifa, I liked him. We went to... there's a bay at Haifa, I went swimming in it. We weren't in South Haifa very long before we moved to Sarafan, which is a new camp, where we used to go to the cinema most nights. Most nights we went to Chateau's. And we see a lot of Bing Crosby.
Were those films popular with the troops, or were they top?
Dorothy Lamour and Bob Hope.
The road films. That was what the troops wanted to see, was it?
Oh, yes.
Well, now there you had another meningitis. I think it was Hutchins.
Gunner Hutchins.
And a quarantine was reimposed.
In the regiment at that time,
But did that mean a lot of work for you, giving everyone swabs and checks and things?
I didn't notice any particular stress at all at the time. So I found the new camp just being, we've got boards all over the place, and the new camp just being established.
And what do you remember of your time there? Your duties and...
There wasn't a lot of sickness there. I remember two men fighting with hatchets.
What, in the unit?
In the unit. Not in, only in a bit of fun. They both had a few drinks, and one was the Muller, Albert Ellis. A little bloke that had 99 prize fights, and he told me he come second at the time. I used to box him quite a lot. He used to knock me about something terrible. And also Vic Jones, who was a sergeant cook, regimental sergeant cook, who had had some time of work for the Trocadero Club in London. I don't know if you know, is it still in existence? Anyway, he used to, Vic Jones was about 6 foot something, and Albert was about 5 foot nothing. But he was a tough guy, and both of them, and they threw axes at each other, inflicting minor wound until I got my rag out and said, if you don't pack it up, your buggers, I'll put you in a fizzy, because they were getting a bit of a bloody nuisance. This went on for quite a long time. It wasn't just a 5 minute job, chucking hatches at each other, Went on for quite some time.
It sounds very dangerous.
It is dangerous. Don't try it, for God's sake.
Were they doing it as a sort of joke, or were they seriously trying to hit each other? I'm not quite sure what level of seriousness.
Well, the thing, if I can stick this at you to get 6 inches from your head, and if you don't move, then you've got more guts than I have if I move. Okay?
And that's what they were doing?
Yeah, because they were sometimes just touching each other. They could have killed each other, there's no problem.
Yeah. And you had to bandage them up, and that's why you...
Can you do it for me, Harry? Look at this. Oh, but it just done that to me. Can you do it? Oh, look, back, come on, back it up, you know.
Was that, were they the only two, I mean, was that prevalent, that sort of behaviour, or was that those two?
No, well, Albert was, he was like that. Albert would fight, he'd fight anybody. He was a great guy, Albert Harris, he was a great guy. Rough, tough, if he, I'll tell you more about him later on if I can remember this. He had a skull. Sarah Fang.
Anything else happened there?
I think they had a minor revolt somewhere, the Jews and Arabs.
There was, but were you aware of the trouble between the Arabic and Jewish populations in Palestine at the time? Or
only very vaguely. You see, I was concerned with the medical duties within the Medina, and that occupied the majority of the time. We had a case of alopecia, all sorts of things.
Well, you couldn't treat that, could you? Or
how do you treat that? Confardes, capsicum, lycra, amon, fort. My word, that's a long time. Yeah, and you sort of rub it in and you encourage the affliction and the confardes. It's what do you call it? Can't think what it is. It's anyway, this
doesn't matter, they can look it up. Hey, what about, I mean, it was pretty hot out there. Any cases of sunstroke early on?
Don't recall yet, Sarah Fan, no.
Now, you weren't there long, were you, before you went up to Gadira? What was it like at Gadira camp?
We weren't there very long. I don't have any vivid memories, except, of course, at the time we were taken, our photograph was taken, the four young men. Bob Falls, Bob Paulson, Lewis, and myself, taken on the beach at Cadera by, I think he was Captain Peter Burton, later Major Peter Burton.
Now that picture reoccurs in your story, so we'll come back. But that was what you used to do, go down on the beach?
And of course, Hadera, where we went to next. Hadera. Hadera was a comparatively new camp being formed. It was my job to give the Arabs tetanus injections, tetanus toxoid, half a cc for 10 days time by 1 cc, which made the 4 hours feel like death warmed up, and also go to the Jewish kibbutz, the working camps, and the young Jewish and people like that do the same thing there.
Why were you doing that?
Well, they all came under our particular medical command of that particular unit or brigade who was in that area, because they were doing civilian work on the camp for the benefit of the British Army. The Arabs complained like mad, of course, and I went to a couple of days later to come to Davis Tower and Aspen and came through them and we were sitting down in the Lion Group. Some quite not very clean hobbles or anything, but it was quite fun.
Was there any antipathy? I mean, other than you were giving them injections, which some of them didn't want, but I mean, how were the Jewish and Arab populations towards you?
I was finding them all right. I never had any trouble at all. The Jewish people were very hard working people. And so were the Arabs, and I never had any difficulty. I learned to speak a bit of Arabic, very little, but they were all Arabic.
That's unusual. I mean, what made you decide to try that? Or did you just pick it up without trying?
Well, I had
Arabic, a bit of Arabic. There's not many of them bothered.
Well, you've got to ask a few primitive questions. How are you today? What do you complain? If you can pick up how many times have we got him in case of dysentery, how many times he's been to pass to make motion and things like that. It's all things that you want to know to build up for the doctor to build up diagnosis. You can talk it and transfer it, which of course I did learn to speak Italian
later on. Right. Now, after Hadera, they went up to a firing camp at Asludge. You'd go with them, would you?
I went to Asludge. Yes.
What do you remember? What was Asludge like?
Pretty rough. It was sandstorms, heat. Of course, there, Bob Paulson got an appendicitis, of which he later died of appendicitis. It formed the peritonitis. The whole thing collapsed. I think on his way from Asludge on ambulance to Jerusalem Hospital. He died in Jerusalem Hospital of peritonitis, and he was buried, I think, at Ramel.
Now, he was your particular, one of your particular friends. Could anything have been done for him, or was it late diagnosed? Or?
Not really, no.
And was there any heat stroke there? Because it was supposed to be very hot.
In Asludge. There was one particular case with a stupid fool who laid in the sun and went to sleep. And that was the medical of himself, me.
You didn't?
I did.
And how did it affect you?
And a temperature of about 104. I treated myself with calamine lotion and God knows what else. And Finnegan gave me every known possible drug because I really couldn't lose his order. Yeah.
I mean, was it a serious?
I still get touched on it at the time.
Is heat stroke serious? I mean, how serious is it?
It was. Sunstroke was, yes. I mean, blistering and all that. It incapacitated the soldier and couldn't do his duty.
You mean sunburn?
Right. Sunburn. And sunstroke. I mean, a man was not supposed to work with his shirt off. For obvious reason, he would get blisters, and unless he'd been in the desert for some time, if he was desert-wise, hard to the vessel. He got his knees down.
Were people warned about how, when they first got out there, about how to behave with the sun?
Yes, how to behave with the sun, also how to behave regarding the women and the brothels and stuff like that in Cairo and Alexandria and places like that. Because there again, it was a serious thing.
When were they given these lectures on sun and VD and things?
They were given them by two men. One was a doctor. And other by Major Batt, who was the adjutant.
And which covered which?
Well, Major Batt suggested that a man should work off his surplus energy by sport, indulging as much physical hard work as he could. And Finnegan advised, of course, that man should become and have prophylactic treatment by carrying what we call a condom today, or whatever, and using that, and also being.
And that's when you started to issue them?
That's right.
Would that start as soon as you got to Palestine?
Yes.
Before you went up to Mercer?
Yes. That's right. And everyone used to come. Not only the other ranks and officers.
So people were responsible about the way they behaved?
Oh, yes.
Did you get much VD while you were in Palestine?
I recall two cases, only two cases. If there were any more, and they were treated in other units, I don't know, but that was only two I remember.
And again, what disease had been caught?
Hospital. There were mostly gonorrhea. There were some old syphilitic cases which had reoccurred in one or two men. It had lain dormant and it had reoccurred, but gonorrhea was the thing. Which, of course, is nothing.
Was it treated as I mean, sometimes, certainly in the First War, it could be treated as deliberately making yourself unfit for duty, and it was a crime, you know, an army crime.
Yes.
Was it? How was it gonorrhea treated at that time? I mean, was it an offence to go sick with?
It was a criminal offence. It was a military offence. Yes, I believe. Yes, man was punished by it. But I don't recall anybody receiving any field punishment. In contacting people.
How long would they be away for?
Possibly a fortnight in the case of gonorrhea, possibly never come back to the unit in case of a syphilis, especially if it was an advanced case. They'd probably rest alive and whatever, but then what happened to them,
yeah. Now, you mentioned that Batt wanted you to get stuck into sports. What sports were played? Yes. What sports were played at in Palestine over the whole period? What were the main?
We did have a cricket match. But I think it was called El Mugger. And I believe the sergeants played the officers. And El Mugger apparently was the scene of one of our battles in the First World War. I remember Major Barber was then, W. Barber, Bill Barber taking part in the cricket match. I think he was quite a good cricketer. I never took part in that. And medical duties, I was concerned with that. I don't recall any rugby match or any football match taken. I never played cricket.
So what sport was bad wanting people to get involved? You know, you said throw yourself into sport,
yeah,
but what was there for them?
Anything that was going. I mean, when there was a football match or a cricket match or a rugby football match or boxing or swimming, or whatever, that's the thing. I mean, this was sort of before we got involved in the movies. Of course, he had the knowledge of what had happened in the past with army men who had gone out in the Middle East and fallen by the wayside because of the...
So there was a lot of sport played in Palestine?
Oh, yes.
But you weren't involved in much of it?
Later on, in most of it, yes.
Right.